All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, October 6th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for much, much shorter. Still time to get the free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to be optimal lineups, NFL for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB as well throughout the playoffs, NBA coming soon, pretty soon down the pike there, and NHL base projections up on the site as we speak. So go check that out, free for 3 days. Just $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set to go. And that $29.95 is going to go up at the beginning of NBA season, so make sure you lock in that low price. DFSR.com/NFL will get you started. Buddy, who's having the worst? Is anyone having a worse morning, well, in the sports world, than Nick Folk right now?
Well, I was going to say maybe me, just because we had some technical difficulties where we lost a couple minutes of the podcast we just tried to record. But yeah, I mean, if you don't consider me in the sports world, I consider myself in the sports world. I'm sure most people do, including Nick Folk, who's a regular listener, frequent emailer at DFSR. Not this Nick Folk, just another guy from
Piscataway.
But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of customers that have come through DFSR. So we also have a Wayne Corbett, who's incidentally a customer at DFSR too.
No, that's the real one. That's the real Wayne Corbett.
I think it is too. He didn't email me back when I asked if I could use his name as an endorsement for our system when we relaunched the website a year ago, but I didn't take it personally. He's a busy guy. Anyways, yeah, now Nick Folk not having the greatest day, but he'll be recycled on the old kicker carousel soon enough, so don't worry too much about Nick Folk.
And like you said in our original recording, he's rich, so I don't think we have anything to worry about.
Yeah, rich folk, they come off.
All right, so we got a pretty, not a full Sunday of NFL games here that we're going to break down, but with four teams on a bye, and then obviously we had mentioned this yesterday, but the Sunday night game for DraftKings is no longer on the main slate of games, which really actually does whittle down the player pool pretty significantly. There's a lot of bad matchups here as well, and I say bad matchups, I just mean a lot of boring teams facing other boring teams, and you feel bad for their fan bases kind of in general. That's just the way the schedule shook out. If you run out, we put up a cash game breakdown where we went position by position yesterday, going through, who we saw as guys that you can kind of anchor some of your cash games on both sites around. I'll say that when I run optimal lineups on our site right now, especially on FanDuel, when you run the top 25 lineups, you get seven guys who are in 100% of lineups. Six guys are in 100% of lineups, and then someone else is 85%. Can you remember a week where that there's like so little distribution between the lineups of of players here? I mean, it's just completely locked in on certain guys. Can you remember a week where it was this much, I mean, quote unquote, certainty from our system about how at least lineups on FanDuel were going to be constructed?
No, I think there's a lot going on there. So first of all, normally we have a lot of depth in kind of the mid-range wide receiver position, from say 6,500 to 7,500, a lot of interchangeable parts that allow for different kind of flexes at different spots. Additionally, sometimes there's disagreement within our little algorithm about which of the big money plays are best. And this week, we just don't have any of that. And I think that, a combination of bye weeks and, shortened schedule, but also there's some really, really good top-end plays leads the cash games to be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Most of the switching around is just at the kicker and defense positions, right? Everything else is basically locked in. I mean, look, it's Friday afternoon, or excuse me, it's Friday morning. Some of these things change. The injury news, although there's not even that much of that this week, and maybe just, some little inputs here and there get moved around. Vegas lines get moved around. But I really don't see at least our FanDuel lineups moving all that much over the course of the week. DraftKings, a little different pricing, a little tighter over there. Obviously, one less game on the schedule for that. So I think that one is going to be the trickier problem to solve, although that's usually the case when you talk about the difference between FanDuel and DraftKings. So let's get into the week five games that we have going here. A few interesting ones on the slate. A few, I'm almost kind of just like flyover games that you just wouldn't mind just skipping, but we can look into them as well. I do think we're going to see heavy chalk in terms of cash games, because while our system has different inputs than others, we're not so divergent from the rest of the industry in certain cases, especially when it comes to some of the safety plays. Honestly, when it's mostly around the big money, I do think you see a lot of chalk in the industry. But let's go some of these games, and if we mentioned some of the guys in the cash game articles, we'll kind of just nod to them and we'd say we've talked more in depth about them yesterday. First game on the schedule here, Chargers go into New York to face the Giants. Giants come out this week and say they're going to try to possibly involve Wayne Gallman a little more in the running game. How many times have we been down the new Giant running back in the mix now? Is this going to be the guy that finally solidifies some of this Giant running game? Any interest I mean, do you see that with Wayne Gallman, or have we been down this road too many times?
It seems like the Giants are honestly just running a halfway house for running backs. Like, they just come in and they're like, you know, very promising young men who come in and they're supposed to take over the workload and be the next cheap big punt play for big tournaments, whatever. And they just disappoint us every single time. So maybe Wayne Gallman breaks the streak. Maybe it really is all the other running backs and not the Giants' anemic running game that's the problem. But I'm going to put my money on the Giants' anemic running game, at least for this time around. And if Wayne Gallman proves me wrong, God bless him. I root for the guy. I hope he has a great career. But yeah, I'm not going to put my money to back it in DFS this week.
He did carry 11 times for 42 yards last week. You know, maybe sees a slight increase. I don't think it's really going to matter. Now, the story here is obviously the Giants' passing game, because with their lack of running game, they've been forced pretty much all season to just air the ball out as much as possible. And that's led to just huge target shares. Specifically, I mean, for a lot of their guys, specifically Odell Beckham, last 2 weeks he's seen, I think, 15 and 14 targets, something like that. You know, and the only reason he's not sitting pretty much at the top of the target leaderboard right now is because he sat out all of week one and really only played like 60% of a game in a week too, and he's still pretty high up there. You know, when we're trying to lock in Odell's target share in a given week, you know, where do we even set him? I mean, well, as a comparison, guys who are like the best in the business at this are Antonio Brown, let's say, and we set him at like somewhere like in that 11 range, and even that feels high on a week to week basis. Are we putting Odell in that range at this point? I mean, are we higher? I mean, the amount of looks he's getting on a given week are just kind of insane.
Yeah, I think we can put him as the most targeted guy for this week. And that's just based on the target share the last 2 weeks. So, you know, 15 and 13 targets the last 2 weeks. But perhaps even more importantly is just the sheer target share. So 22% against Tampa Bay and then 24% of his team's targets against Philadelphia. Just 15% against Detroit, but to your point, played half of the number of snaps that he did 2 weeks later against Tampa Bay. So I think Beckham Jr., probably the highest raw value targets guy that we could see for this week, or the, I don't know, true talent targets guy going into this week. You know, Sterling and Shepard and Brandon Marshall have been sort of popular sleeper plays, but between those two guys, you really only have one good game on their prices. So that's one good game out of eight that they've played combined so far. So yeah, I think Beckham's just the guy in New York. I think their offense is struggling enough to where they're just going to keep trying to go to what works, and Beckham works. So yeah, I would put him right in that Antonio Brown range, if not even higher, while they're in their current iteration of this offense.
It looks like he's going to get shadow covered by Casey Hayward, which is not a great situation for him. Yeah, Beckham, you know, like he's not, I don't like the guy call guys matchup proof, because I think it's a dumb term, but there are certain levels of guys who just do exist on a plane higher than others. Beckham, Antonio Brown, that's kind of the list at this point. I mean, there's probably a few other guys if they had slightly better quarterback play, but the shadow coverage doesn't help. Now, if you think the shadow coverage from Hayward is going to not decrease the amount of target, you know, the amount of passing attempts, but maybe just the share goes slightly different. We have seen double-digit targets for Brandon Marshall in consecutive weeks. We mentioned Evan Ingram yesterday. Sterling Shepard has had weeks with double-digit targets. Is the Giants' passing game prolific's the wrong word, because it makes it seem like the team's good. But the passing game does have merit. Do you think it's worth it to even target, to even pivot to some of these other guys?
No, not really. I mean, maybe for big tournaments you could go with a guy like Sterling Shepard, or maybe you are the one that figures out when Brandon Marshall's going to have his breakout week. That's fine. I don't mind it. Obviously, the price is to where, and the talent and the history with Brandon Marshall has been where he's obviously put up big weeks in throughout his career. But I don't know why this week would be the week and not any of the other past weeks. The matchup isn't particularly good. The game doesn't rate to be particularly high scoring, although it's definitely reasonable there. I think Evan Ingram is an interesting cash game option, just based on his target share last week and extremely low price. But yeah, when I'm thinking about playing only three wide receivers, I think Odell Beckham Jr. would be the one I would consider from this team, rather than trying to figure out which of the other guys, if any of the other guys, are going to have big games there.
We mentioned Keenan Allen in depth yesterday as a cash game play. I don't think he sees enough of Janoris Jenkins that you need to really worry about him getting shadow covered like that from like an elite cornerback. So I think Keenan Allen is still just completely reasonable to lock in load, especially on FanDuel, where the price is in that mid 7,000s range. What's your feeling here on Melvin Gordon now? You know, the Giants, we went into the season, and even after week one, thinking that Gordon was going to be, you know, a kind of in and around that top level guy in terms of just usage. You know, we mentioned guys like Bell and Gurley yesterday, and this, like, the, you know, the crazy just like the crazy group of just run, the guys are getting run to the ground. I kind of thought Gurley would be somewhere in that same range. He's been a little dinged up at times, but I mean, are you just so worried about him at this point where like he's seen significant downgrade in how much they've been using him?
Yeah, I'm not too interested in Melvin Gordon. I mean, the run share is obviously troubling, but he's just, throughout his career, honestly, not been a guy who, when he even does get the bulk of the carries, has been very consistent on a yards per carry basis. Now, you like him because he is the definitive goal line back. That's really, really nice, because a lot of teams definitely share carries once they get inside the 5-yard line. But, I mean, last week, 2.2 yards per carry. Week 2 against Miami, 1.4 yards per carry. A fine game, I guess, against Kansas City, and then a bad game against Denver. So why am I playing Melvin Gordon would be the question I would ask myself. I know the Giants haven't been stellar against the run so far this season, but they came in with a reputation that this would be a tougher run defense, and even their early season struggles notwithstanding, at 7,100, Gordon just doesn't strike me as, he doesn't strike me as particularly safe for cash games, and I don't know where the upside is because he doesn't break off long runs. So from top to bottom, Gordon's just not a guy I'm going to play this week.
Yeah, you mentioned the Giants defense. They came into the season kind of ballyhooed as that their bread and butter was going to be the run game. They actually ranked 31st in the league in DVOA. So that's not adjusted DVOA, but still, I mean, it's not going to adjust up to one. So like their run defense just hasn't been anywhere close to, I think, where they kind of envisioned it was going to be. Pass defense has been bad as well, 25th. They've just been a bad defense overall. They ranked 28th in the league in DVOA. That being said, Chargers are still underdogs here without a particularly high over-under, although for this week, 45 is about as good as you can ask for outside of a couple games, and one of them got played yesterday. So you know, as we get to talking about some less interesting games down here, the Giants, Chargers, on a week where there's not a lot to get excited about, 45 over-under is, it's like the third highest.
Yeah, that matters for something.
Mm-hmm. The third highest that you're going to see. Much lower than that, 40 over-under in the Buffalo-Cincinnati game here. And you say, whoa, there's going to be a couple games in the schedule that it's going to be tough to draw things to talk about. Although I guess there are a couple of interesting things here. Joe Mixon was a guy that we didn't mind. I hesitate to use the word like, but didn't mind going into week 4 at his price. He got carries and he had snaps. Cool. He didn't do anything with them. I don't know. There's just too much of a run share / he's just probably not good enough to really consider on a week to week basis. Right.
Joe Mixon has 52 carries this season for 136 yards, Doug. That is so bad. I mean, and we're not even in really small sample size territory right now. I mean, I get that some of his carries earlier on were kind of short yardage downs, but to say nothing of the fact that Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill are still on this team, he's been bad. It's not working. Maybe they look at it and they just keep going back to the drawing board and keep slamming their head against a wall. And even if they do, what are we hoping for? The 18 carries for 62 yards he had against Green Bay? Like, I just don't know. I don't know why I'm playing Joe Mixon. He's not 5,000 anymore. He's 5,900. You actually have to pay something for this. That's sticking your neck out a little bit. Don't play Joe Mixon. I mean, one thing I can say about Joe Mixon is you'll get separation on him if you decide to play him in a big tournament, because ain't nobody going to play Joe Mixon this week. But that just, if you're the guy, yeah, maybe you strike gold that I don't see. But nah, I'm not playing that guy.
Buffalo does rank first overall in DVOA. Now, I do think there is some interesting things here in the passing game. We've seen AJ Green having pretty steady targets when they've been needing to throw. Tyler Kroft had a breakout game last week, filling in for Tyler Eifert. He was on the injury list, but I believe he's going to play. Any interest here in the Dalton Green, Kroft passing game part of their offense, which actually does seem to be at least working a little bit?
Yeah, I think Kroft is an interesting upside play. The snaps have been there each of the last 2 weeks. Obviously, last week he doubled his target share up to 13%, punched in 2 touchdowns. Obviously, you can't count on him doing that every single week. And if you just take the yardage on a standalone basis and figure that even on that target share, he'd be good for something like a quarter of a touchdown per game, I think he's not a super interesting play. I mean, you can do it. I don't think it's terrible for big tournament purposes. I don't think you're going to get the separation you want, because a lot of people are going to view him as a high upside guy. The other guy in this very game, Charles Clay, is probably a guy I like better at a very similar price. So no, I'm not super interested in Kroft. I think Green is interesting. I mean, he has the one big game this season when he was overwhelming chalk against Green Bay. That spurred a lot of good feelings into him being a well-owned player last week against Cleveland. And there were some statistical reasons for that as well. But he's just really not, I mean, at 7,500, he was a no-brainer sort of play. Now at 8,300, that's more than 10% more expensive, which is a huge deal in a relatively efficient pricing model like FanDuel's algorithm there. And yeah, I don't know. Like last week, he goes for 5 catches, 63 yards, and a touchdown. That's all well and good, but it's not even particularly good on 8,300. And I think you could see significantly lower floor than that. So all told, I'm okay on AJ Green. I'm not going to play him for cash games. Reasonable big tournament option, but not a guy who's in my like top 10 of interesting wide receiver plays this week.
Like I said, Buffalo is first overall in DVOA. They're not
defensive DVOA. Yeah.
Defensive DVOA. They're not going to end the season there. They've had some scheduling upside on their part where they just really haven't had to play.
It's Denver, Carolina.
Right, half of a game against Atlanta where they didn't have Jones and Sanu. So I just don't, and they do play a very slow pace though, and that's actually why you don't want to target them typically on a week-to-week basis, because they run the ball so much that you're just not going to get the same amount of snaps on a given week that you would say even against a league neutral team. On the Buffalo side, like, they do run the ball. McCoy is a guy that we've seen upside from in the past. Any interest here at all in the Buffalo side of the ball? Cincinnati does rank top 10 in defensive DVOA as well this year.
Well, I mentioned Charles Clay. I think he's an okay option. I don't see it with McCoy. I mean, he's another year older, still gets a fair amount of touches. He's in certainly the top 10 or so in the league in terms of touch expectation, probably from week to week. But what's he really done with those touches this season? Like 18 fantasy points against the Jets, fine, that's great. 7, 10, and 12 since then. Nothing to write home about. I mean, the yards per carry really haven't been there. The last three games, two of those have had 1.5 yards per carry or fewer. One against Denver, fine, but 12 carries for 9 yards against Carolina. You just can't even call him a high floor option anymore. And if he's not a high floor option, then you're going for ceiling. And in this price range, at this position and others, you can get a higher ceiling too. So I am off LeSean McCoy, not playing him.
The next 1 o'clock game is the Jets and Cleveland. How often over the course of the 1 o'clock games do you think the red zone channel moves to this game? Do you think it ever gets there?
Maybe they can like switch over fast enough to watch someone running an interception back for a touchdown or something like that. It's not looking super good. Like the most, just sight unseen, and maybe you've looked at this already. How much do you think you need to pay for the most expensive receiver in this game?
It's probably Kenny Britt, and on FanDuel, it's $6,400.
$5,600, Jermaine Kearse.
Kearse was the other guy I was thinking. I still wouldn't have gone that low.
That is a low number, buddy, for the most expensive skill position player overall. It's Bilal Powell at $6,600.
Powell's the guy we talked about yesterday.
He's a pretty good player.
he's interesting. Actually, this is the only reason to maybe tune into this game, because he's interesting. They gave him the lion's share of the work. We talked about him as a pretty strong cash game play last week, even though I thought it was kind of like Donkey Town to play him in cash last week, and I was incorrect about that. I'll say this about Cleveland. Their defense is bad. They rank 30th in non-adjusted DVOA, and they played Steelers week one, which is okay. Then they played the Ravens, who are awful. Then they played the Colts, who are awful. Then they played the Bengals, who looked real bad. And they have lit up points to every single one of these teams.
Thankfully, the Jets are bad too. But I do like Bilal Powell. I like the Jets defense too. You know, if you're running a defense out there, the Jets defense cheap against Cleveland here. Cleveland, no weapons on any side of the ball. So, you know,
it's bad news. Yeah. Like I said,
how much time do we have to talk about this game? Just out of curiosity.
No, we're going to move on now.
I'm not in a rush, but I was just curious.
I was going to sum it up by just saying play ball. The wide receiver thing is really just going to make me giggle the rest of the time. It's so funny. It is really hard to have a full game. This is like when Nebraska plays like Missouri in college football, where they just like both teams just run the ball the whole time. RIP college football DFS. All right. A game that actually we can get interested in here is the next 1 o'clock game. Jacksonville goes into Pitt. Pittsburgh is the biggest favorite, I believe, on the Sunday of games. Yep. They're -8.5. We talked at length about
by large margin, by the way. Every other game, the biggest spread after that is 6.5. After that, it's 3. A lot of tight spreads today.
I think that there's a lot of reasons that Le'Veon Bell is going to be chalked. This is just another one of them. Like, it's all, every factor is just moving in his direction. It's just every single person is going to play him this week. I think it's completely correct. Now, another guy that we didn't mention here though on the Pittsburgh side that's actually showing a lot in our system right now is actually Antonio Brown. So Brown is not a guy, I did not write him up for cash games. I wrote up some of the other receivers that we talked about, Keenan Allen, DeAndre Hopkins, etc.
By the way, Brown, you led in there like Brown was a sleeper, just so you know. You're like, he's not off the radar guy coming at you.
No, he's not a sleeper, but here's the thing. I've seen this kind of on Twitter, and I saw this actually in our chat room yesterday as well. He's not a sleeper, but I actually don't think people are going to play them. The Jacksonville defense has been very good against the pass. Now, there were some numbers quoted about like how often Jalen Ramsey and company have been thrown at this season, which look real good on paper until you look at who Jacksonville has played. Like, Jacksonville has played no receivers this year. And so some of these numbers, this is why I always get a little spooked about using early season numbers to kind of dictate what a team looks like going forward on a week-to-week basis. So yes, Jacksonville looks really good against the pass right now, and they have Jalen Ramsey is a good cover corner, and he will actually shadow Brian. But their numbers are completely skewed. Week one, they played Houston with Matt Savage. Tom Savage. They played Tennessee week two. Tennessee doesn't throw the ball at all and has no receivers. They played Baltimore week three. They have no quarterback or receivers. And then they played the Jets last week. Like, whose defense wouldn't look good against the pass against those four teams that they played, right? Like, so this is where, at this point, like, where do we... we have to use some numbers to kind of like make sure that we're getting a good grip on what a defense looks like. But how much should we trust at all that Jacksonville looks great on paper against the pass this year?
Yeah, I don't think we trust it too much based on being on paper this year. And this is where football, basketball works this way too. It really helps to get down to a more granular level. And strength of schedule just matters so much. Like, you know, again, use the basketball comparison. If a team had played four games so far in basketball, we would just look at it and be like, whatever, dude. You know, like, okay, great. Good job beating, you know, all the Bulls backups and, you know, just whatever bad team you've been playing against. And I think we need to look at this through the same lens. You know, we have some calculations inside of our system that account for strength of schedule, but that can be tricky to interpret. People will say it's a quarter of the season, but again, that's all relative. It doesn't actually matter. Math doesn't care that football is only going to be 16 games this year. What it cares about is trying to develop longer term sample sizes. So I think if you look at Jacksonville personnel, you look at the track record of this defense in the past, I would say still at best, they would be sort of a league average defense. I would guess that there's something less than that. And for that reason, I think Brown is a great play. I wouldn't have any reservations whatsoever about rostering Brown here.
Yeah, I actually don't mind rostering just him and Bell and Cash on FanDuel. Like, sure. I think that has a pretty damn high floor. And I actually think we are going to get a little separation on Brown because I think people are going to look. I mean, Jacksonville, number one in defensive DVOA against the pass, dead last against the rush. But there's a context behind that. They haven't played any receivers at all. So yep. I really want to caution people against looking at those numbers, or at least just going back and just doing a sanity check on the schedule, because I've seen that narrative used too many times this week, and it's just making me feel even more comfortable about getting a little separation there on Brown. Jacksonville side of the ball here, Marquise Lee possibly is going to sit out this game. I'm not sure. I'm laughing because some of these games just don't even matter. They play for Bortles. It just doesn't matter who this guy throws to. He just can't throw to anybody. But Marquise Lee might sit out. It looks like they're probably going to play catch up, which is Blake Bortles' bread and butter. Any interest in the Fournette Bortles poo-poo platter of what wide receivers are throwing out here in a game where the at least for the pass game is at least they're going to probably have opportunities.
Hearns is an upside play. Fournette's an upside play. Mercedes Lewis, the one game he actually played or actually caught a ball, he was great. just so you know, Mercedes Lewis, because I just fell into this trap. I was like, oh man, did Mercedes Lewis miss games? No, it turns out Mercedes Lewis has played 54, 64, 69, and 39 snaps this season and only caught a ball in one of those single games.
So. I'm just going to laugh this whole podcast. Some of these teams are insane.
These are upside plays. You can take the starter on. Here's a general disclaimer. You can take the starter on any team and he's an upside play. There you go. There's not a whole lot more analysis I can offer you about this kind of thing. If the game script does flip and Jacksonville does, say, jump out to an early lead for some reason, then Fournette's a good play. I will say I can see scenarios in which Fournette puts up a big total. He is a high-volume back. Don't play anyone else on this team, though, please.
Tennessee and Miami does not have a line going into the game right now. I believe that's probably because they're waiting on the status of Mariota. I bet you Mariota plays, there was no over-under, but Tennessee is still a -3, which tells you a lot about Miami. I was like, well, we don't really care. We just don't know how many points everyone's going to score, but Tennessee's still a favorite going into Miami, no matter who. They're quarterback independent. So Miami is just a complete mess. Tennessee on the road, they run the ball a lot. They're still kind of in that timeshare between Murray and Henry. Let's assume Mariota plays. Rashard Matthews is a guy we didn't mind as a kind of not emerging, but at least like was seeing targets, and it actually was pretty
serviceable.
It was getting serviceable targets in the game until Mariota got hurt, and that was actually really a shame too, because the game script was probably going to open up for Matthews even more as they tried to play catch up. Any interest there going back into here now to week five into a guy like Matthews still coming kind of cheap on DraftKings?
No, not really. I mean, Mariota's uncertain health. He'll play, but will he be at 100%? Will he be, you know, able to hit the guys that he normally hits? You know, what's the game script going to look like here? There's a lot of factors that make Matthews pretty risky, not the least of which is the fact that he only played 34 snaps last week. So there's just a lot of problems there. He was heavily targeted on the snaps that he was on the field, but given the uncertain nature of him, again, I just don't know why him in particular, you know, of all the people I can play, why yeah. Rashard Matthews? I think there was a compelling case for him earlier in the season, particularly against going into the Seattle game where the target share was very reasonable. The snaps were high. He had a starting quarterback, but here, so many question marks. Why? Why Matthews? No.
It does seem weird that the Dolphins were able to win week one against the Chargers after watching how they played in the last 2 weeks, where they've been outscored 40-6 by the Jets and the Saints. I mean, they have had a lot of weirdness in their travel. That probably is affecting them a little bit after getting that first game postponed. Then they have to go to London. They're going to lose a bye here. It's just going to be a long season for the Dolphins. Now, the Dolphins are as bad as they've been, a couple guys are getting targets. At least Jay Cutler's really only throwing to basically two guys here at this point. He's throwing to Landry and to Parker. Again, they're probably going to play catcher. Tennessee does have a good defense, and they are decent against the pass. But, you know, we've seen double-digit target games out of Parker and Landry before. They don't get a ton of yards. Parker has found the end zone. Any interest in the Miami passing game?
Yeah, I guess if I had to lean in a direction here, I would lean in the direction of Parker. I don't think maybe the consistency will be there when the season is all said and done, but the upside just seems to be dramatically higher. Landry's never really been anything more than a possession receiver in the first place, and now that he's older, perhaps lost a step or two, I think we can see him kind of take weeks off. I think Parker's the more explosive of the two wide receivers. He's also a little bit cheaper, and the target share is just fine. So like 15, 17, 17, those are fine numbers on a guy who's 6,100. So yeah, there's a lot to not like about the Miami just offense in general, but I think Parker is a potential bright spot. I would not mind playing him in any format, probably. I mean, it wouldn't feel amazing, but if he showed up, I could live with it. So, but Landry, I don't mind Landry, but I just think that the floor, how high can you really call the floor now after 2 weeks of 7.8 and 7 points? Like that's a pretty crappy floor on this price. So I think I would lean in Parker's direction there.
Yeah, it's just because like the passing opportunities for him are just so many of these quick screens and these quick little just dump off passes that even when the targets are there, the yards just aren't. So I think I'm with you. I probably would at least appreciate more of the downfield stuff from Parker than Landry. Again, not a game I'm completely interested in. Arizona goes into Philly. Philly actually probably has the second highest spread going into this week, -6.5 with a 45 over under. So they're right up there with the highest projected total teams on the week. We did see, after they went into last week looking like they were going to have something of a timeshare at running back, and that looks like it's still going to be the case going forward. They just have, you know, LeGarrette Blount got 16 carries, Corey Clement 10, and Wendell Smallwood 10. Blount was the big like beneficiary in terms of yards, 136 total yards. Do you think that he starts to solidify more of a part in the running game just based on that performance, or do you think that they still kind of go to this three-headed monster against the Cardinals day?
It's so tough, man. I'm definitely once bitten and twice shy, thrice shy with the Eagles running game. We've seen guys kind of emerge and then, you know, kind of scuttle back to obscurity with the Eagles in the past. I was encouraged by Blount's game last week. I mean, it was driven by an unsustainably high yards per carry total. I think if he just goes back down to, split the difference, 15 touches, you're probably not going to want to play 5,900. All that said, I think he's a reasonable big upside play. I think if he does turn into the Eagles running back, if you know which week that's going to be and he just gets 20 carries and three receptions or whatever and happens to score a touchdown, you'll be pretty happy about it. But I really like the big money options on FanDuel this week, and I don't know that paying down for Blount would leave me feeling as safe. Because if I were to do that, say I was going to go down from Bell and Gurley to Blount, and I would have to pay up elsewhere. Like, I'd just as soon have Bell and Gurley and one of the middling wide receivers that we've discussed, Devontae Parker. Like, that might be the actual thing. Would I rather have Bell and Devontae Parker or Blount and Antonio Brown? It kind of seems like I'm getting the worst on both sides of that equation. So I just don't think I'm going to play Blount for cash. But I do like him for big tournaments.
That reasoning makes total sense. Eagles passing game, interesting here. We mentioned Ertz as a play yesterday. I do think we talked about him as just being so damn consistent in terms of tight end, where we're just, that's consistency is really just kind of lost at that position in general. This week, Alshon's going to get, I think, every bit of Patrick Peterson. And we saw that in weeks where he had shadow coverage, like I believe again when he had against Janoris Jenkins, we saw Ertz get targets. Ertz has gotten the targets almost no matter what. Does it make you feel even better about him that one of the other main target guys on the team draws about as bad a matchup as you can have on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, I actually don't think Jeffrey has shaped into a wide receiver one at all here, but he's the best that the Eagles have to offer in that department and probably will draw that shadow coverage from Patrick Peterson. Ertz has been very consistent. He's kind of expensive now. I think if you compare him to the other $6,600 players at other positions, just as a reasonable proxy on what level of points you should be able to expect, I think he actually has among the highest floors at any player at this price, but the ceiling isn't really there. So I do like it for cash games. I think for big tournaments, you can probably do better, though.
Arizona side of the ball, we talked about Jaren Brown as a just almost mispriced on FanDuel. He's only 4,600 there. He's seen double-digit targets in two out of his 3 weeks. Larry Fitz is a guy that we were just I mean, the week that I get Larry Fitzgerald right is going to be the first. He's just like the class.
Like, feels like it's been years.
I know at the end of the season, we're going to average it out, and the targets are going to be right on lock with like whatever we had in the aggregate.
Larry Fitzgerald, 1,200 yards, huh? Okay.
Right, all in just in the odd weeks that I didn't play him. But they did, he caught sort of that luck box touchdown at the end that ended the game. That really was the only thing that saved his day. Are we willing to go back to him now? Because we've seen it, like, you know, I hate to, on a week-to-week basis, completely overcorrect in the previous week, because that can sometimes be a bigger problem as anything else. It's like, if you overcorrect going either way, like, you know, think a guy's going to get too many carries, a la, you know, Rashard Higgins that way, you know, in week three, or you have a guy like Larry Fitzgerald who, you know, I hate making big proclamations about a guy after a down week, but the Cardinals are still going to need to throw the ball a lot. It really feels like he's still kind of the primary receiver there. How do we feel about him in the passing game this week?
Yeah, I don't feel terrible about Fitzgerald. It's just that I don't feel inspired to any great degree of confidence either. I think if we looked at the targets and you and I felt confident about them, then I would go with Fitzgerald. It's just that the target share has been up and down, like go from 18% to 10% to 19.5% to 8.5%. I don't know. I think that one is being generous with oneself if you do anything other than try to split the difference there. And if you split the difference there, I'm not sure if he's an attractive play at 6,700. So it's very close on Fitzgerald. I think if we split the difference and the numbers worked out, I could accept it. But I wouldn't feel like he was like the chalk 65% ownership guy here going forward. And from that perspective, we might have better options at his price range.
I have met an aggressive amount. I would say what I would call an aggressive amount of targets, and he's still not showing up in top lines, which I feel
fine with him being a pass.
Right, I have him at 10 targets right now, which is actually below
his. That's high.
It's below his season average per game, but again, those have been like lumpy in terms of the performance.
Well, a lot of that's fueled by a 15 target game with Dallas. Like, you know, if we're trying to go for average, you know, it's weird because the distribution of targets in the NFL is not going to be, you know, regular distribution, right? Like, it's not like there are very few guys who just go out there, actually outside of tight ends, and they just get 9 targets a game, you know, and then at the end of the season, they average 9 targets a game and they get 9 targets every game. Teams tend to exploit matchups that are working well for them and moving away from matchups that aren't working as well. So that's why a guy like Alshon Jeffrey will be considerably worse when he draws blanket coverage because he's not as quick as he used to be. And he might just go off in a week where he has a better spot. Same goes for Jarvis Landry. And Larry Fitzgerald, I think, falls into that category as well. So really with Fitzgerald, I think it's going to be about picking your spots going forward. I think in this case, this just isn't the spot I would want to pick.
All right, before we hit some more of these games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Sure, I'd love to talk about FantasyFactor.com, Doug. FantasyFactor is a great site to go and play a salary cap format without having to deal with all the sharks putting in hundreds of lineups. Really perfect for people playing between $5 and $100 per slate, FantasyFactor.com. They also do something really cool. If you haven't played there before but you want to start building a bankroll, FantasyFactor has access to a $500 NFL free roll. And if I know their free rolls like they've been in the past, that will be plenty of money to be passed around for the applicants that are playing. So check out FantasyFactor.com, sign up for the NFL $500 free roll. You can click through on our site or just head right on over there. And if they give you an opportunity to tell them we sent you and that you're grateful for the opportunity, FantasyFactor.com.
Next 1 o'clock game, San Francisco at Indianapolis. I'm laughing because of some of these games, man. 45 over under for this one on a pretty thin spread game. So Vegas not expecting much in the way of defense for two teams that aren't particularly good on offense. Carlos Hyde is a guy that I wrote up as really in that right in the level below the Gurley's and Bell's. I mean, he's you know, 15% less, but that actually says a lot because those guys, Bell and Gurley, are so far above the group in terms of overall usage. Hyde is in that next group below them. Pretty solid look. I guess Ezekiel Elliott is probably above him also, but in that group below him. In a game that's pretty thin spread, Indy has shown some ability to get some stuff on offense going, but Vegas doesn't really see it playing out the way. Can you see rostering Hyde in a cash game here, specifically more on DraftKings, where the pricing is going to make it difficult to play? Really, you're going to really struggle to play, I think, Bell and Gurley together, although it's possible. Can you see playing him in cash over there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hyde is an excellent play this week. Really, it's only a health question for me, but if he has a clean bill of health going into this game, Indianapolis, a bad run defense. They also can't, they don't really hold the ball very much because their running game is also bad. So should be a lot of plays. Vegas reflects this, one of the higher totals on the week in spite of the anemic offenses going here. And Hyde's just a high floor player. I mean, even week one had just 9 carries, but 11 fantasy points because he's highly featured in the passing game as well. The PPR really matters for Hyde, you know, with the 17 total receptions on the season through 4 games. So yeah, lots to like here. Reasonable on a yards per carry basis. His team is also is not very good at passing the ball, so I think Hyde one of the elite options, and that is saying something because in the rest of this game, I mean, are you seeing anything else in the rest of this game?
The only weirdness, yeah, there is some weirdness in the San Francisco passing game. Aldrick Robinson and Trent Taylor both saw double digit targets last week. Robinson saw 12, Taylor saw 10. I mean, they come completely out of nowhere. I do think people could maybe talk themselves into one of these two guys. I personally am not going to. The quarterback play is not good enough, and they do that. They both seem like completely outlier performances.
Aldrick Robinson also only caught 3 passes there. So if an outlier performance for him is going out there and catching 3 balls for 52 yards, I think I know everything I need to know.
Well, Taylor only caught 5. Again, their quarterback plays bad, and they're just not so very bad. Good. And they're not very good in general. I do think you could see Garcon maybe creep back up into just like what they wanted to do with him. He's been somewhat consistent over a week-to-week basis. Although, again, like they just can't complete enough passes. Now, I'm not seeing a ton here. System doesn't mind Frank Gore, mostly because San Francisco has been pretty bad against the run. Gore, if you were to carry 15 times, which you would need to, and probably get at least like 3 targets, and the only reason it's like in that excuse is only 4,400 on DraftKings. So I'm not excited about it. I would be hard pressed to probably even play him out of a flex position just because I just think the team is not good enough. Sure. But that being said, I mean, there's a couple like Jack Doyle is really cheap on DraftKings at 3,700. He's had some targets as well and draws a pretty decent matchup. San Francisco's been bad against tight ends. I guess there's, you know, it's really all just price plays coming out of this game, right? Like I'm not excited about them in terms of, I don't think any of them are particularly good, but they're all so very cheap and they are the guys that do get the opportunities on his team, on their team. So like I said, 4,400 for Gore, 37 for Doyle and DraftKings where I think you'll see some people own them. I just don't know if that's the direction I'm going to go because it's the Colts and they stink. 4 o'clock game. Let's move into those. There's only 3 games in the 4 o'clock hour, which always makes Sunday really boring. Although I guess one of them is rates out to be, I guess 2 of them rate out to be pretty good. First one is not that game, Baltimore and Oakland. Carr is going to sit out here at least for the next 3 weeks. Although I guess there is some optimism on his health that he'll be able to return sooner than later. I mean, with him on the shelf, it's amazing. It really says a lot about Baltimore that Oakland's still a -2.5 favorite here with EJ Manuel at quarterback. Anything to like about this game at all, Oakland side, Baltimore side, or is this just kind of generally a skip for you?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's generally a skip. I would say it's 100% a skip. Oakland in particular, like what do you like, the run game? Marshawn Lynch, 15 carries for 30 yards in the last 2 weeks. Maybe you like the passing game where they're not going to have their quarterback when they were already sort of struggling. Amari Cooper is rating out as the worst overall receiver, given the, I think it was a Pro Football Focus thing, given the balls thrown in his direction, the drops, the ineffectiveness after catching the ball, simply terrible the last 2 weeks in particular. Yeah, Oakland from top to bottom offensively is a mess already. And with Carr gone, it becomes even worse somehow. So nope, not playing these guys. Not a single guy on this team is even remotely interesting for me here.
Yeah, I'm the same way with Baltimore, too. Like, even though the Oakland defense has not been very good, they spread the ball out. They've had a bunch of different guys. I mean, Javorius Allen at times seemed like he was going to be the guy. You really have no idea what, like, but then Alex Collins gets 9 carries last week, so who knows? There's no reason. I don't even think there's even reasons to go out on a limb on these guys this week. Some people will do it. I never really tread into these waters. This is speculative, even for like even the most, you know, risk tolerant.
Like you're going to the bus station to try to pick up a girl. You know, it's like, nah, there's better places to go to if you want to find the love of your life than sitting at the bus station. So
says you. The other 4 o'clock game is the Seattle.
What do I know about picking up women in this day and age, Doug? It's been a while. So good
seems
point.
Like you know about picking them up at the bus station.
So, I said I don't go to the bus station, and I'll talk to you about it after the podcast. Yeah, not podcast word.
Seattle takes on the Rams, which actually you didn't probably vision this game as being like an offensively sound game going into the start of the season, but actually kind of is rating out to be that way. 47 over under at a pick 'em right now for the Rams, which again, there's no way if this game had been week one, there's no possible way the line would have been this way. But the Rams have looked competent on offense, mostly because
competent. They've outscored the whole league. They've scored more points than anyone.
Yeah. Apologies. They've been very good on offense, thanks in large part to Gurley, who we talked about in depth yesterday. Seattle's been completely completely garbo against the run this year. They've let up, they rank 30th in DVOA. And it's not even like they've had world beaters running against them up until this point. Just like other teams where the running games haven't materialized in other matchups, and yet they've just allowed a ton of rushing yards. Do you think, we talked about Gurley, so I think we're fine there as being probably a chalk play, at least on FanDuel. Anywhere else on the Rams side of the ball? There's a lot of points. Gurley does chew up a lot of their usage on a given week, but is there anything else you like on that side of the ball?
I mean, not especially. I think you can make a case for some bigger upside plays here, but I think for the most part, Gurley is the whole offense. Like, he's the guy that gets the ball down close. He's the guy who can punch it in from far away. He controls the ball when they're ahead. They still give it to him when they're behind. I think if you're trying to figure out, like, who the guy is going to be, who's going to put it together outside of Gurley, you know, maybe one week it's going to be Sammy Watkins, maybe Cooper Kupp another week, but I don't know that we have enough data to know who that's going to be at any given time. And so for that reason, I'll play Gurley from this game and let other people speculate on the other guys.
Yeah, Gurley led the team in rush attempts and targets last week. So that's really just going to be kind of the case for him going forward. I think Watkins is a little banged up right now. I'm not sure it would matter for me one way or the other. Kupp had the second most targets on the team last week with 7. I converted him for 5 for 60 and a touchdown. I'm not excited about him at all. Seattle side of the ball, we talked about Russell Wilson as being a cash game play yesterday. I think, you know, Doug Baldwin looks like he's going to play, and I believe Jimmy Graham is going to as well. What do we do with the Seattle running situation here? Pete Carroll has said that both Rawls and Lacy are going to get something like heavy load. I've cracked up so many times in this podcast because some of this hyperbole. I mean, Pete Carroll, this guy, a year cannot go by where he doesn't make up something about the running game.
He's just a politician in a football coach's uniform. Like, he just says whatever, doesn't matter. He just wants the interview to be over. And no one can ever hold his feet to the fire. It's not like they're obligated to tell the opposing team their exact strategy on who's going to touch the ball. So, Lacy, Rawls, I don't know. Again, if you can figure it out, go for it. I just don't know why I'm going to. Like, it's not like either of these guys is going to be inheriting a run game that's been dominant so far this season. Like, even when Carson was the guy, it's not like Seattle was really putting anything together, and neither Lacy nor Rawls has really done anything when given the opportunity so far. So nope, not going to play either of those guys. Someone interesting in the passing game, though, right? I mean, Wilson, I think, is still a play this week. I think he could see some cash game ownership, and then people are going to also try to figure out where his targets are going to go. What do you think there?
I like a bounce back week here for Doug Baldwin. Baldwin only saw 3 targets. He was a little bit banged up last week. I still kind of consider him in that wide receiver 1A group. You know, he's not in the top group. But he's like in the same group as like Keenan Allen. Not in terms of, I would much rather have Allen, but I do think that Baldwin has been pretty consistent, at least on a week to week basis over the course of last year, and I think that he does tick back up. The injuries are a little bit of a concern. They had a down week where they didn't have to pass that much near the end of the game last week, so the targets all drifted sort of down. We talked about Wilson. I think he's clearly a cash game play here. He's been just such a big part of the offense, and he's been running enough too that it keeps the floor pretty high. So if I were to pick between the two running backs, I'd probably go Lacy, only because 11 carries for 52 yards last week. He didn't look horrible, but I mean, that's complete speculation, and I'm not going to pick between either one of them, but if I was forced to pick one, I probably would go Lacy. The last game in the 4 o'clock hour, 4:25 game, as Green Bay goes into Dallas, with Dallas as a -2 favorite. This game has, I believe, the second highest total. Yeah, this was the second highest one after the Thursday game at 52, looking very much like a shootout. We talked about Rodgers yesterday. The other, some other injury news from this game, which actually could be important. Ty Montgomery has not practiced this week. He has been hurt. He has broken ribs. He left the game in week 4.
Doesn't sound good.
Very early, and then they thought he was going to, then it was like, oh, his ribs are bruised, but then they were broken, but then he was going to wear the flap jacket, and then he didn't really practice, and so it's a very weird situation with Ty Montgomery here, and then Davante Adams also has not practiced this week. If these two guys were to sit, what do we do with the Green Bay offense here? What do we do in terms of the run game? Aaron Jones came in and got some carries. They have Jamal Williams, but I'm just like not sure. Is it just like even more Aaron Rodgers? If Ty were to sit here, do we just get even more Rodgers than we usually do, which is already a lot?
Yeah, I think he's the primary beneficiary here. I think it's important to note on Green Bay that Montgomery was already sort of a hedge for them. Like, he came up as a wide receiver and was listed on a wide receiver as basically until halfway through last season. So, you know, I think if they had a bunch of better options, they probably would have went with them in the first place. Aaron Jones did get 13 carries last week, looked reasonable, averaging just under 4 yards per carry. He's obviously young, drafted last season, 5th round pick. I don't think they thought he was anything special, but again, they were so shallow at the position that You know, I think they were in kind of dire straits there. He's super cheap-ish, like $5,900 is like, I don't know, just kind of what you pay. It's like a Joe Mixon sort of price. It would definitely be cheap if we thought he was going to be the guy and get 15 to 20 carries. I think that makes him a very interesting big tournament option. For the sake of safety, if Montgomery were out, I don't know if I would want to, you know, go away from Bell or Gurley to play him. But on DraftKings, where you could play three running backs, I think he makes a very interesting option.
And like we said, Rodgers is basically personnel independent at this point. Like he doesn't. Oh yeah, I love Rodgers. Doesn't seem to matter who he's got going out there. If Adams were to sit, I would probably tick up the target share on Cobb and Jordy even more than it already is.
Sure.
You know, they're kind of at a hedge place right now because Rodgers has been fine spreading the ball around, and Nelson has dealt, and both Nelson and Cobb have dealt with injuries over the course of this year. So I don't think we have a really true sense of like what their target share is going to be going forward, just because there's been so many like just little injury pieces and game script things that have gone on. But if Ty were to sit, and definitely if Adams were to sit, I see both those wide receivers as pushing up toward borderline cash game plays, because you can imagine a scenario where Rodgers just goes to them all game long. And I completely echo your sentiments on Jones. On the Dallas side of the ball, there's a couple of interesting things here. In re-looking at it, it's close. I kind of wish I had written up Dak at quarterback this week. I don't know what your thoughts are there. He'd definitely been passing more this season than I thought he had. And when I tick that number up to like where, because last year they were so run heavy, and that really just hasn't. They're still been running with Zeke, so he's still getting pretty elite touches on a week to week basis. But they're definitely throwing more this year, and I think that's likely the offensive line is just a little worse. I think the run game is just a little bit worse, where they're going to need to keep doing that. You know, could I have made? Is there a reasonable case to play Dak in cash here? He's been throwing around 36 times a game. He's been decent. Should he have been in that article as well?
Yeah, potentially. Dak has provided a nice high floor so far this season. Worst game has been 17 fantasy points. Best game 23.5. And so over a 4-game sample, you know, he's pretty much doing the same thing week in, week out. The completion percentage is a little erratic for a guy in this price range, up to 72, but down to 55.6 against the Rams in a pretty decent matchup last week. You know, he's arguably run hot in terms of touchdowns to interceptions so far this year, just based on some of the completion percentage issues. That being said, he's not terrible by any stretch. The passing yards really haven't been anything to write home about. He does supplement that with a pretty solid rushing game, although that too, you know, getting an extra 20, 22 yards per game isn't anything to write home about, but it's definitely something. So I think Dak is fine. I think that what you're really hoping to tap into here is just the fact that the points are going to have to go somewhere. And given that this has the second highest total on this, or of any, oh yeah, any game on the slate, right? Or the highest total of any game on the slate since New England is in the Thursday game, then I think Dak is a solid play. I don't know. There's a lot of options.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question then. On FanDuel, they're around the same price. In cash this week, would you rather play Watson or Dak?
I'd rather play Dak for sure. Yeah, I think the existing track record on him. I think Watson, in his wildest dreams, hopes to turn into Dak at this point. So, yeah, I would play Dak.
Interesting. Yeah, we have them projected very close to each other right now, about a half a point away, with Dak just is 200 more. And the reason I only mention this on FanDuel is because Watson is not available on the DraftKings main slate, because that's the 8:30 game. The other guy that I'm really interested in this game is Dez. Dez has had a very weird season. He has, and by weird I mean bad. Like it's one of these things though where it's been bad, but I do think there's also some context to it. The good news on him, his targets are still very much in that elite class. Like he has gotten pretty, 2 weeks of over 20% target share. But he's also drawn, he drew the Denver cornerbacks week two, which is as bad as you can get. He drew Jenkins in week one, which is also bad. And he drew Peterson in week three. So he's at 3 of his 4 weeks against basically like four of the top five cornerbacks in all of football, something like that. But, and then, had a 5 for 98 game last week. Do you see him as like some of the narrative around him being driven by you really couldn't have run worse and who he had to face this year? I love him for a bounce back this week.
Yeah, bounce back week is a reasonable projection here. Just keep in mind that last week probably should have been the bounce back week if we were going to see one, and it was nothing to write home about. Like 98 yards is good, 5 receptions, pretty meh, 12.3 fantasy points, no touchdowns. Again, nothing to write home about. I think you like his red zone usage. He's obviously a nice big target in the red zone. He obviously has a track record of putting up big games in the past. I think he's kind of priced like if he were like even 73, if he was like 7,400, I would love him even for cash this week. At 7,800, he feels more like a big tournament play to me. I guess I could see doing it, like, you know, if we just looked at the targets and it felt like it was right. But I would really want to reevaluate the quality of his targets so far this season, because yeah, he had some tough matchups early in the season, but I don't think you can make that excuse last week. And his target share, like to get 22.4% of your team's targets and only turn that into 5 and 98, is really not what you're looking for on the highest of ends. But the price is still relatively cheap if he were to turn that into his normal production as it's been in the past. So yeah, I'm a little uncertain on Dez. I think he's got a lot of upside. I think a great tournament play for cash. I would need to really sit with it for a while and break it down on a more granular level.
Yeah, you don't love the 5 for 13 for sure. I am encouraged that they just continue to go his way. Like, so like he's had the
don't have a lot of other options.
Exactly. They've had conversion issues with him all season. But they just don't seem to be scared about continuing to throw him. So, I love him as a tournament play this week. I'll have a decent amount of Dak and Dez, and even just Dez on his own, just in the wide receiver for GBPs, just because I do see him as a separation play where some of the other people might be, you know, might go a little bit more Beckham, maybe more AJ Green in spots like this. I don't know. Maybe I'm misinterpreting what the rest of the industry thinks about Dez, but we're awfully high on him. All right, let's get into the 8:25 game here, or excuse me, 8:30 game. KC goes into Houston. This game is only available on the FanDuel slate of games, and then you can play the two game on DraftKings, or actually, I guess it works into some of those primetime ones. Kelsey coming off a big game here. You know, Kareem Hunt still looking very much like a running back one. How much do we want to target this game on FanDuel, considering some of the prices on these guys?
Yeah, I think you mentioned some of the guys that I'm looking at here. I think Hunt, really on the Kansas City side of the ball, is the only guy I would be interested in. I think you're paying for it right now, man. Like, there aren't really many guys who can sustain a $9,000 price tag. And I get that we have a really good four-game sample on Hunt so far, but I think you're starting to leave a little bit of the upside on this play by the wayside by paying $9,000 for it. So at $9,000, to me, Kareem Hunt is pretty matchup dependent. And for that reason, I don't know why I should be targeting Houston particularly. Houston this season, the sixth fewest yards allowed in spite of playing some fairly good offenses. So I don't think I'm going to personally play Kareem Hunt, although I don't blame anyone who does, particularly for big tournaments. But on the passing side of the ball, I don't know. Tyreek Hill's kind of expensive for what he does. Kelsey is almost a direct quote of that, also pretty expensive for what he does. Do you like anyone else on KC?
Well, I just don't like the prices, like you mentioned, because this team is just, these are the only three guys, right? And so when you have, these are the only three guys that do, you know, 90% of the offensive production on a given week.
And the offense isn't that amazing, right? Like, you know,
right.
Like Kareem Hunt, again, it's been great, but like, I don't know, Tyreek Hill, this seems expensive. I just assume, you know, look across the bench to the other side and see DeAndre Hopkins, and I'd much rather take 300 extra and play him over Hill, who's been very, very up and down.
Oh, yeah, I think Hopkins is a cash game play. We wrote him up. I think Deshaun Watson is probably borderline cash game play if you think they're going to stay in the game. Vegas very much thinks they are. Some of that can be like sort of like recency bias on a guy. I think that we probably are going to see some rough weeks from Watson. His teams maybe figure him out. It's just tough for
rookie quarterbacks. We just don't know. It's so early. Exactly. Like, how are we supposed to know if he's good or not? He's played effectively three games. Like, that's nothing. We've seen so many quarterbacks have a good couple of games and then disappear completely, so...
And that's why I agree with you on the Dak versus Watson thing. I'd much rather take the track record here. But no, the Houston side of the ball, I still do want to play some of those guys. I mean, we could still be seeing low prices on Watson if you were to sort of continue this kind of line of production. Hopkins as well. And it's really encouraging, like we said in the podcast yesterday, that he's been able to just become more consistent with his targets, and it does seem like that was all quarterback dependent. Monday night game, finally, let's just finish this one off. Minnesota goes into Chicago. Sam Bradford had practice this week, and unclear if he's going to play or not, but Minnesota obviously without Dalvin Cook. We talked a little bit about this in a previous podcast this week. I don't remember which one, but the Minnesota running game between McKinnick, Latavius Murray, do we have any interest in there? I mean, this is now we're just kind of talking short slate kind of stuff.
Yeah, not especially. I mean, I think Murray, I would have more interest in Murray over McKinnon if he were named the sole starter here. McKinnon was listed as questionable earlier this week. He did practice in full on Thursday, so doesn't look like he's going to miss the game. Fortunately for him, potentially, unfortunately, for our purposes. Nah, I think it's all speculative. Two-game slate. Even on a two-game slate, you can probably do better here, frankly. Like, if you're just playing this Sunday into Monday, you can. I would feel better about, say, Kareem Hunt and Jordan Howard or something rather than speculating on this game. So, from top, the running game of Minnesota, too questionable for me right now.
And Chicago starts Mitch Trubisky, and have a good rest of the year, Bear fans. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com/NFL gets you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, NBA, and just less than a month away on that one, and then base hockey projections. So you can get yourself started with whatever DFS sport you're playing. Free for 3 days, and then $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy your weekend of football. I'll talk to you next week when we take a look back at the week where we won it all.
Let's be honest, buddy. You'll talk to me all weekend long.
Good point.